1,000 years.
1,000 years, and then civilization clash. So what is portraying is that knowledge, you know, and proof and evolve, like better build humanity.
Yeah.
Like without knowledge or anything, the civilization will crash. So it's an understandable thing that people will travel to heaven in order to
seek civilization.
Seek civilization, like helping humanity and stuff.
I think it's similar too when you're going through in modern society and you go to this university or that university or whatever place of learning, and you're thinking that you're getting, you're trying to choose the best place to learn whatever you're trying to learn, right? And when word has it that there's a place that's dealing with these concepts on a higher level or in a more competent way, I think you would probably choose that place. I mean, in Europe at that time, it seems that Ireland was this place. There was no other place that was that was actually dealing with these ideas.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying. You see, now, like, if you went, take all your universities, okay, all your best universities, 95% of the people there, we're in a post-industrial society. People go there. They don't go there to get ideas. They go there because they think it's going to get them a better job, a better position in society. They're not going there. So I'm saying there's an economic reason. People go to Harvard not because they think Harvard, you know, there's probably a very
people
go to Harvard because, oh, I'm going to get a good job when I get my diploma.
Right. So which is, you can see the degeneration though in that kind of motivation.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not going there to learn, but only for economic reasons, and you think that for some reason the mystique of a particular institution is going to get you a better job.
Well, I don't say it's an honorable thing. It's a noble thing. But I'm saying nobility is pretty. Reserved for the nobility.
Well, that's what it was like in Rome, actually. And see that, this is an interesting thing because Roman society was the same thing. Most people were totally bestialized. You had a very small elite that got education, and they were completely uncreative. And again, you know, Cahill, it's useful to read it because he portrays what Roman society was like before the collapse. Totally banal, totally boring. People are just bored. You know that. What gets you ahead is to do what's already been done. You know, don't innovate. There's no real thinking going on. Total banality. I mean, it's just a really pathetic existence. You know, people escape into
circus,
drugs, into the entertainment life in Rome, all this kind of, very much like today. It's the same type of culture. People do things in order to get ahead, but guess what? The whole thing is collapsing. Right? And it's collapsing, but it's collapsing over a prolonged period. And that's another important point of what we're seeing today. Right.
Well, it's not so prolonged by those standards because the American Empire is not even 100 years old.
Mm-hmm. But over decades. But it doesn't happen like that. The collapse doesn't happen in the blink of an eye.
And there are factors for it. It doesn't happen out of the blue either.
Yeah, it never does.
There are factors, human factors, and intentional factors, outside factors.
And it's also significant that when you start making choices of the type that it seems that a lot of people are making, you know, what kind of job can I get at the end of this? Rather than making the choice of, okay, where am I going to get the best education? What's going to allow me to understand the universe better? You have a process which is intrinsically degenerative. You're into that process. And so when you clue into the fact that if you actually try and learn something, you can change that dynamic and become regenerative, anti-entropic nature. I mean, there's something I think within us in terms of our desire to survive or to lift our lives that, you know, at one point after the party's been going on for decades and it's still the same old party and there's not much going on, and, you know, you grab onto something which is actually powerful in nature.
Well, some people do. I think the vast majority of people are just quite content to go along and eating and fucking. And, you know.
Yeah, but if you can wake them up to the higher aspect within themselves, to the higher thing within them, the higher humanity within them. It's amazing how, I mean, that's a powerful force. I think that within people who are in escapist mode, I mean, there is a certain longing or boredom or powerlessness of feeling and or lack of creativity. And there's a desire to be more creative. And you know, with the right type of development, with real ideas, creative powers are increased. And that's exciting, I think, for most people. I mean, you see them, people driving down the road to work, from work, and so on. If people stop to really think about what they're doing, sometimes it can be pretty overwhelmingly depressing. So if you can introduce an aspect, you know, if you can introduce something which allows them to break free of that in a real way and become more creative and to realize the potential which is in each person for creation.
I mean, I agree, that's what I do every day, that's my job, but I'm just saying that the, you know, the vast majority of people will never exercise their freedom. If you came in, you know, I have friends who are working in China now, and they say, oh, well, you know, it's not much different than here. The people, you say, oh, the people in China aren't free, but what do the people in China do? They get up, they go to work, they come home. They do the same things as the people here do. If you give people freedom, they don't really ever exercise it, so it doesn't really matter anyway.
Do people here have freedom? That's the question.
It's not about giving people freedom per se, in terms of taking the shackles off, more in terms of like instigating a certain development.
Well, I see what you're saying. I understand. I just wonder about
political freedom, but be culturally enslaved to axioms, to points, ideas that are false or that are false, but people believe in them and they're just false, so you're mentally a slave. There's also that kind of thing.
I think it might be good to focus on how there's a few examples presented tonight on people that actually intervene to change the status quo and how we can bring that about. You know, as Cahill refers to in the beginning, that, you know, in any time of crisis, well, so far anyway, for civilizations that survive, you get exceptional individuals who step forward as gift givers, right? They're the ones that preserve traditions or they introduce new ideas that transform society, that get it through a hard time or save it in some form so it can be reborn later. The key thing is not to focus on, because again, it's the problem that because of the culture that we live in, because of the education that we receive, we tend to look at the world at any given time as a fixed, something that's fixed, as opposed to looking at how it's changing. Like right now, we're in a profoundly revolutionary period. Most people haven't figured it out yet, but that doesn't mean we're not in it. So, you know, and this idea that, I don't think it is necessarily true that, and certainly it couldn't be proven necessarily true, that the majority of humanity will always behave like sheep.
Well, they always have.
But that doesn't mean much. That's not, you can't prove an argument on that basis. And besides, I mean, you look at this Irish thing, and it's pretty hard to say that the majority of the population were behaving like brutes. You know, and besides, it's not. It would be a mistake to focus on that anyway, I think, because what you really want to focus on is how do you change and ennoble these people? I think even the average guy up there today,
or gal,
has a far higher potential for development if he chooses or she chooses than somebody back in the Roman period. So how does that come about? You know, how do we make those improvements in society? I mean, there must be something going on, because if you remember the population graph, how it skyrockets. You know, so we've managed to create societies that, you know, we can improve things. We can do good, and that good can persist and continue to improve things for a long time, even after we're gone. You know, even if most people don't take the responsibility. But we shouldn't use the, you know, the backwardness of the majority as a reason for not doing something. In fact, that's all the more reason to do something.
And it's a sophism.
No, but that's not my argument. I'm just wondering. It's just a question.
Is it feasible?
I just don't think you will a mass migration of idealists, to one center of Ireland, which is out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, we know that happened. That's not refutable, but you're asking if it could happen again, right?
No, I'm asking what happened? How did all these people? You just said these people came there seeking education.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. It was a religious movement. So yes, a driver was somewhere a religious movement. They're seeking God.
Ah, so then is that it? Because you didn't
mention anything
of that. Is there persecution of Christians, and so this is the refuge for them?
I think before we could really resolve this argument, you'd have to double the square.
Double the square.
Yeah, you'd have to see. You can't. It's like you have this funny thing in geometry. Don't think I'm weird, for I saw you roll your eyes. If you have a circle, if you put a square inside it, it's not really completely a square, but you'll have to do. Now, what we're taught in school is that if you add enough sides to the square, it'll become a circle. You increase the size of the polygon, but it's not actually true. And Nicholas of Cusa gives a proof of that. I don't want to go through that or anything, but what I want to make the point is, we have the number pi, right? This irrational number goes on and on and on, never resolves itself. Well, why do you think that is?
Why do I think there's a number of pi?
Well, why is pi this irrational like it is? This is an incredibly important question, but we never ask it. But this is very important.
What is the question?
I'm at, pi at 3.1416,
yes,
blah, 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 right?
Is, yes.
Why does it do that?
Because it's an irrational number.
But
what's the, that's a,
yeah,
pathology.
But,
that's a,
but this is the thing.
Argument.
Yeah, we get, this is what we get told, right? But you can actually, you can discover why this irrational is behaving like it is. And it has nothing to do with numbers per se. It has to do with geometry.
Of course, it's the ratio of the circumference to the diameter.
Ah, right. Okay, so this is interesting. So so the diameter then wraps around three times, and then there's this little bit extra, right? But you can't actually, no matter how hard you try, measure the circumference with the diameter. Right, that's what we've come to see. There's no length of the diameter that we could cut off and tag onto those, the three that we wrap around, that would actually, that we could cut in a knowable way, that would give us the whole circumference. Well, Cusa deals with this when he's saying, can you really make a polygon into a circle? What he proves is that, in fact, you never can. That, in fact, it is impossible for a straight line to measure or be equal to a curved line. That, in fact, it's impossible to generate a circle from a square or any polygon. In fact, the circle is something transcendental to the square and to every other polygon. You can, and it's funny, you can take it. If you cut out a circle and you're folding it in different ways, you can construct all the regular polygons, but you can't take any polygon and from manipulating a polygon and construct a circle. Okay, so what's the point? How can you understand the passion that's evoked in somebody when they discover their humanity, they make a discovery, if you haven't made a discovery? So it's hard to resolve the argument. Unless, we can work through it, probably not tonight because it's late, but work through it. One example we pose to people is the doubling of the square. You take a square of area 1 and then constructively double that area. There's other, proving Pythagorean theorem, these kinds of things, which the idea being you start off without the answer. Then you have to figure out how to get the answer.
Finding the circumference of the earth, that was the great...
Yeah, we did that one night, Valentin and his brother and another contact, and we worked for a couple, like 3 hours on that, I think. Huh? Two hours. But we got it, you know, and it was great. Everybody was super happy afterwards, and it's not like we made any money.
I did Pythagoras' theorem.
Yeah, you did that just recently, right?
I aggregated it.
Yeah. He gave in, but he
I was bored, man.
But he confessed. He confessed, and then he repented. So, but the thing is to when you experience that, then it makes more sense how you could have a mass movement organized around a principle of discovery and the process of discovery, which is what they were doing, you know, by reintroducing learning into a society that had lost it. You know, we can try it out sometime. Doubling the square of Pythagorean theorem. It's fun. It's stressful, but it's fun.
No, I was just asking a question. I was just wondering what would motivate these people. So I guess there's nothing in that book that explains that.
Well, I mean, he deals with that more when he discusses why he thinks that that the Irish converted. What was it that Patrick offered? And he offered in a certain way, a completely new universe. But it was one that was knowable. It wasn't irrational anymore.
Yeah, I didn't quite understand that either, because he said, well, he got rid of superstition, but didn't he really just trade one set of superstitions for another?
No, that's the whole thing. You know, whatever occurred later on in the church, and there's some bad... Again, you know, these are the ironies of history, right? It's the time of Augustine, as Rome was disintegrating, the one institution that endured was the church. If you did, and Augustine knew this, if you didn't save the church, civilization was gone. But then later, the church becomes the oppressor. And at that point, you have these same types of circles, these humanist circles saying, well, now we have to save the kings now. We've got to get these kings thinking so we can establish nation states and break the power of the ultramontane church.
That's the Renaissance.
Yeah, and even before that, I mean, Dante was talking about that, and you had for like 400 years. I mean, you had this desire to establish secular governments that would and to break this ultramontane system. So, but it's not. I mean, what Patrick was doing, these guys. The idea of education at the same time as your learning about the religion is very, very different. It's not just a bunch of superstitions. That's why, you know, you'll see Augustine and Cusa and these guys. I mean, they write massive volumes of literature to rationally express the idea of the Creator. They're not just saying believe, read and believe, and you'll be saved. They're saying think, work, think, teach, and you know, do good. So it's a big difference. But yeah, it's hard to find that outlook these days.
But this is like the result of a civilization, the big civilization that collapsed, and like having people thinking about what happened, basically searching better things than finding them. Reasons for like the migration to Adam was the result of the Roman Empire the collapse.
Sure, that's a part of it. They were looking for somewhere where they where they could learn. But I don't think the economic reasons are primary.
Exactly.
That's the means to the end. Just like in our lives, I mean, how many people out there will tell you that the economy is based on human greed? It's not true.
Donald Trump will say so.
Yeah, they might, but of course, you know, they're talking about a failed system, right? That's the funny thing. Like, well, buddy, you know, you say it's based on greed, but your system just failed. It's collapsing. So it must not work.
There's more greed now than ever.
Yeah, so
be rich.
Therefore, what economic system does work? And in fact, it's a system that's based on love, what you'd call the American system. of political economy, which is not what we see today. The idea is doing good, and you organize your society in order to allow people to do good.
Find out what's good. But what's the difference between greed and aspiration?
Greed and aspiration? Well, maybe in this society, not much.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you aspiring to?
I think it's just rhetoric. I think it's just, you know, I mean, it's one of the problems with this movement is that there's the rhetoric is always very, very strong. I think there are a lot of interesting ideas, but sometimes the rhetoric is very destructive.
What do you mean, rhetoric?
Some of the rhetoric is very destructive.
Like doing good, you mean? Or these
no,
kinds of things?
No, that's not what I mean. I think it's very late. I appreciate the lecture and everything. Maybe we'll talk more sometime. But,
mm-hmm.
I mean, greed, aspiration. If you see, do you see what I mean? If you want to frame something a certain way, you frame it a certain way, and I just think that's it's a little destructive at the same time.
Well, because people in this society, your average guy out there, probably wants to get money, to get ahead, to get some kind of material
right,
possession.
Is that greed or is that aspiration? If he wants to make a better life for his family, have a bigger house, is
mm-hmm.
that greed or is that aspiration?
Oh, this is the whole question. What is the purpose for which we work? We don't just work to get money, do we?
I don't know about you.
Do you?
I don't work.
No, what do?
I play.
You play? Okay, well you play, but what it does that gets you money, I mean, what do we do this for? I mean, what is the purpose of our lives in the end?
To die.
Is it just to get some pleasure and stuff like this?
I tried to figure that out, how did they?
Yeah, well, this is the big question, right? And
what's
big
the
capital
of life?
Letters. But that, in the end, that's what it comes down to. You know, you organize your society or your economy based on some principle, and in the case of Rome, they organized it on what we call the oligarchical principle. That is, that you're just there to the concept of justice. Whoever's the most powerful decides what's just. Justice is arbitrary, and you exert power in the end just for the sake of exerting power.
But that's the thing. That's why the Roman Empire lasted as long as it did, and that's why it's so important
today,
is because it created a system of laws which were consistent, private property, so on, which allowed people to have the Pax Romana.
No, the Roman Empire was one of the greatest atrocities to ever occur to the human species.
Really, so there'd be years of barbarism and just people having
Rome
chaos
was barbarous.
And,
Rome itself, the Roman Empire,
they crucified a man who
was
did
a
nothing.
Barbarian.
Yeah.
Well,
they crucified a man who did nothing.
Well, look, not even that. I mean, what did they do to their people? Besides because look, this meant the depopulation of Rome happened 200 years before the barbarians invaded. That you had an internal rot that was occurring. Besides the fact that their biggest infrastructure projects were for people to come and watch mass murder, you know, or, you know, the chariot racing and stuff like this, or degenerate theater. They were not playing Aeschylus in the Roman theater. They were not playing the great Greek tragedies. They were, you know, virtually like your modern sitcoms. That's what they were.
Wrestling.
They were doing, right?
Yeah,
all kinds of shit like that. So
yeah.
There was really nothing. Anything that Rome... God, they really made no innovations. Roman law is not really a great system of law. And, they made no technological innovations. They took a bunch from
it. It's not a great system of law compared to what?
Compared to say, the U.S. Constitution?
With
the U.S. Constitution is, you know, 1,000 years later.
To the expression of even the ancient Greeks. Rome was a real degeneration from classical Greek culture.
They killed the man that Archimedes had discovered by. The mm-hmm. Roman soldiers killed him. They didn't know who he was. They just fought an old guy sitting on books, and the soldiers killed him.
Well, that's maybe that's how it happened.
It's probably
but,
the pillaging of the city there was.
But
he
I
didn't
mean,
realize the importance of what he was doing because he didn't look because there was civilization based on sense perception, on an arbitrary sense of what was right or wrong and.
Well, I would like to add something to that, though, because you got to keep in mind who built the siege weapons that held the Romans off. It was Archimedes' siege weapons. So
but they didn't know that he was Archimedes. The guy
sure, they
would.
Yeah.
No, they didn't know.
Well,
was
if they know, they would have probably taken him prisoner and gone to do it for them.
But
right?
See, that's the whole idea of Rome.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem of Rome. They say, kill him. We don't want his technologies. We want to destroy his technologies. There's no capacity within the Roman oligarchy or within the oligarchy today to be creative at all.
If they can't have it, they would rather that nobody had it.
Yeah. So no, there's nothing really good about Rome, but it's remember, if you grew up in Canada here, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
We grew up in a British school system, pretty much, right? I mean, the Brits think that they were the new Roman Empire. So don't be surprised that Rome gets glorified. But I think it's the same in a lot of the West, that it's one of the problems today that Rome gets glorified, because there's nothing worthy in Rome. And anything like a St. Augustine or a Cicero and these types of figures never drew their inspiration from Roman civilization. They were taking it from ancient Greece, from things which, from the standpoint of ideas, were fundamentally opposed to what was happening in Roman culture.
Well, it was nice to meet you all.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming
down.
Around.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's
great.
Yeah, no problem.
Oh, it's fun.